Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Kohl Center last night, Wisconsin and Michigan.
Ethan Happel inbound. He's roaming to his right, roams to his left, gets it into Koenig, spins away from Walton, now gets the half-feed, Showalter on the reverse, around the rim and in. The Badgers attacking the press. Gets it into Xavier Simpson across half court. A three is in the air. It is no good. And the Badgers extend the home court winning streak to 17 games.
The outstanding Matt LePay, good friend. I'll see Matt back on Tuesday night when we go to Madison when Penn State takes on Wisconsin. And speaking of the great state of Wisconsin, one of the truly outstanding play-by-play guys anywhere, the voice of the Green Bay Packers, Wayne Larrivee, joins us. Wayne, an absolute pleasure. Great to hear you again.
Nice to talk to you, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's great to hear you. And now you're on to the NFC Championship game. Can you put into words what you witnessed in that three-and-a-half-hour passion play on Sunday evening?
Just a spectacular football game. I mean, it was everything you could want at a football game, and two great teams going at it, and you know, two franchises that have a lot of championship history to them, and I think that was what was so prevalent in that game, the way they played and went at each other.
The last couple of years, the Packers have really been hit by a lot of injuries. The offensive line last year, Jordy Nelson last year. This year it's been at corner. What has allowed the Packers to survive defensively with all the injuries at corner?
Well, I think Dom Capers has done a great job of mixing and matching people at the cornerback spot. It kind of crimped his style a little bit. He maybe doesn't blitz quite as much as he used to, and he's got to take care of those cornerbacks who are very young and some of them playing through injuries all year. He's had to take care of them and help them out with safety help. And normally, Dom likes to play one safety high and the other in the box, and he hasn't been able to do as much of that as I'm sure he'd like.
Are people underappreciating HaHa Clinton Dix? Because it sounds like he's been one of those guys that's had to cover up over there.
Yeah, no, he's had a great year, and you know, I think people understand that. He's going to go to the Pro Bowl, and his second year he's really blossomed. But the guy that really makes it work back there is Morgan Burnett, and he went out of that Cowboys game with a quad injury. His status will be probably questionable throughout the week. Hopefully he'll be able to play this week and play well, but he's a big key to that defense in the middle.
They weren't able to get. Now, the Cowboy offensive line is really, really good. Were you surprised that the Packers didn't get a little bit more pressure on Dak Prescott?
Not at all. I mean, the Cowboys line is the best in football, and, you know, they're outstanding, especially blocking for the run, but they're good against the pass as well. And, you know, it was tough. Julius and Clay got close a couple of times. They did rattle the quarterback, pressured him a couple of times, but it wasn't the big sack fest you hoped it might be. But you couldn't expect that against that kind of a line. They're a quality line.
Yeah, what kind of job has Nick Perry done, especially the fact he has to wear that club right now?
You know, he's been amazingly effective with that club. You know, he continues to be around the football, around the quarterback. He holds a pretty stout edge against the run, which is huge. And, you know, he's been great. He's had a great season, 10 sacks this year, even had an interception. Playing through the pain and playing with the club with basically one hand, that's hard to do when you're a pass rusher.
I want to get to Ty Montgomery on offense for a moment because, I mean, Lacy's a good back. He got himself into some shape. Obviously, I've always liked James Starks. I always have. But what kind of job has Ty Montgomery done to give them just enough in the running game?
You know, he's been it's been interesting. I just did a note here a minute ago. I mean, they ran very effectively in Dallas against the Cowboys. They didn't run enough. They ran 17 times, had 80 some yards. You know, so he ran effectively in that ball game. Their running game is always going to be a work in progress. You lose Eddie Lacy, who was having a very good year, and don't get me wrong, the Packers are not a better team without Eddie Lacy. They're a better team with him running the football. But Ty Montgomery has kind of picked up some of the slack and at times has given the Packers a real effective runner. They can split him off the line and give Aaron Rodgers a read of what the defense is doing. Are they man-to-man? Are they zone? They can motion him back into the offensive backfield. He has natural running back instinct, and he's got a running back's body at 6 feet, 216 pounds. So I think you're going to see him continue a running back next year. Hopefully it will be in tandem with Eddie Lacy, but Eddie's a free agent after this season, so we'll see how it goes.
As you know, Wayne, I work with Jack Hamm, and something Jack's always told me about Le'Veon Bell, and he mentioned to me about an hour ago about Ty Montgomery, is that it was always difficult for linebackers in particular to go against a back that could run routes like a wideout. Bell runs routes like a wideout. Well, so does Ty Montgomery. How important a factor has that been occasionally for Aaron Rodgers to exploit?
Well, I'm not surprised. That's an astute remark by Jack. I mean, there's no question that's a big part of it. You know, if you have the ability as a running back, and yet so often these running backs catching the ball, running routes is a secondary thing for them, for most running backs, most great running backs. But with guys like Le'Veon Bell and Ty Montgomery, I mean, that's kind of part of their DNA, and I think that's a big part of what makes them effective.
All right, let's get to the offensive front, because that's one area that I think people forget last year. You don't, obviously. You lived through it, that the Packers had so many moving parts last year. What is the health of that offensive line meant to what we're seeing right now?
I think it's great. It's been big. You know, 2 years ago, they in Dallas were 1-2 in terms of offensive lines, with the Packers being the second best line, the Cowboys number one, and the Packers the best pass blocking line. And that's exactly how it is this year. I don't know. I know the Pro Football Focus grades leave it pretty much like that. Cowboys overall number one, Packers number two, but number one pass blocking. And this line has been great this year. It really have. They cut Josh Sitton for a number of reasons at left guard. He went to the Bears, had a fine season there, but Lane Taylor has stepped in and done a fine job for them, and they haven't seemed to miss a beat. They've been a little nicked up at times with T.J. Lang playing through injury, and at times Brian Bulaga, Bakhtiari went in and out over the last game or so. They've gotten banged up on occasion, but for the most part, this has been a great, very efficient line.
And obviously, Aaron Rodgers, I haven't asked you a question yet about him, but you know, he's had to play through injuries and so forth. What has the return of nearly complete mobility meant to what he does creatively?
Well, I think it's a big part of what he does. Obviously, to make that rollout in the final seconds at Dallas and throw that strike down the sidelines to Jared Cook. I mean, if he had the calf injury and the hamstring problem he had earlier in the year, he probably can't get out that far to make that throw. And, you know, with his mobility back, this is a guy that, you know, now he's got all his tools. And he looks 100%. He's moving very well. And this is going to be a big key this week against Atlanta, buying some time for the receivers downfield to get open and then making a play on the move.
You see him every game. How cool and collected is this guy in moments?
He's a cool customer, that's for sure, especially when the chips are down. I think he looks forward to that part of the game. He really does, and doesn't fret at all about it. And, you know, it's funny because we're in Dallas last week, and they get the ball with 35 seconds to go on the Green Bay 25-yard line, and, you know, 35 seconds was plenty of time to get the Packers into field goal range, despite taking a 10-yard sack. And, you know, the sack by Jeff Heath, great call by Rod Marinelli, the defensive coordinator of Dallas, brought pressure off Rodgers' blind side, and it was amazing to see him hold on to the ball, get a timeout called, get everybody reorganized, and then call that next play.
I think he's one of the few quarterbacks, in my mind, you may have a different opinion, that knows where all 21 chess pieces are at all times. Is that fair?
Yeah, no question about it. He has a full comprehension of everything going on around him, and especially downfield.
All right, now, when, over the years, whether it was Finley, of course, the old Penn Stater, Corliss, the tight end's always been important to him. What has the emergence of Cook meant to the Green Bay offense and Aaron Rodgers?
It's meant everything. It's the only way they've been able to really compensate for the loss of Jordy Nelson. Cook is huge. He, you know, we had a tight end here called Jermichael Finley. He was a good tight end with great athletic ability to get the seam. Cook has the same athletic ability, but Cook has football smarts and sense and understands what they're looking for. And we're not talking about the stuff you draw up in X's and O's. We're talking about the natural instinct and smarts to get down somewhere and get in somewhere, that type of thing. And that's really been the key, I think, Jared Cook's presence.
Obviously, I saw Geronimo Allison at Illinois, and Adams has been there. They got Cobb back, but then, of course, they lose Nelson. What's your opinion of the receiving core for the Packers and their reliability for Rodgers, and what, if anything, do you know about Jordy Nelson?
Don't know anything really concrete yet. I still think he's a long shot to play this week. I think they'll list him as questionable, but you know, that's going to be tough for him to make it this week. I know he'd like to. He told me he'd like to play this week. Very disappointed to miss the Dallas game, but nonetheless, I think he's, you know, they'll do what they can with him. And at any rate, with Davante Adams emerging as a legitimate NFL receiver now, and Randall Cobb being returned to health, and Jared Cook, Geronimo Allison has been a revelation out of Illinois, rookie free agent. So when you put all that together, they're not destitute of wide receiver, even though Jordy may not play.
I know the game. I have two more questions, then I'll let you go, Wayne. I appreciate your time very much. The first time with Atlanta, which probably seems like 1,000 years ago, what were the factors that allowed the Falcons to win by one?
Matt Ryan made a drive in the final seconds, which he does a lot of. I mean, he's one of those guys who has a knack in the final seconds for getting a team on the scoreboard and winning a game and pulling it out. You know, I think he's done it, well, 33 game-winning drives in his career, 25 of them on the last drive of the game, and that's what he did. He caught the Packers in a coverage, got Mohamed Sanu in the end zone, hit him with a pass, and it was a come-from-behind win. That was one of those games where the Packers played well enough offensively to win, and they just couldn't quite contain Atlanta, but both teams are better now than they were then, and the Falcons were missing one of their running backs, and I think the toughest matchup for the Packers in this game are the two running backs. I mean, Julio Jones is Julio Jones, but no team in the NFL has a Devontae Freeman and a Tevin Coleman that both can run the ball for 1,000 yards and catch the ball like wide receivers downfield. They have great speed, and they will be a difficult matchup because you cannot put, I mean, you're going to put linebackers on them, but you can't expect those linebackers to hold up against guys like those.
Which brings me to the final question. In addition to that, where are a couple of the other swing factors that you're looking for initially?
I think that's the big swing factor right there. And, you know, again, I think the Packers will do a decent job on the wide receivers. Matt Ryan is going to do his thing. So will Aaron Rodgers. But I think that the real tough matchup that I just don't know how Dom's going to handle it is that matchup defending their running backs, both on the ground and through the air.
Wayne, an absolute pleasure. It always is. Thanks so much for your time, and best of luck to the Packers on Sunday.
Thank you, Steve. All the best to you, and we'll hopefully see you down the road.
Same here, Wayne. Appreciate it. Wayne Larrivee, one of the best in the business without question. You listen to one of his broadcasts, you can see the game on the radio. It's about as high a compliment as you can pay to somebody that does this job. We will come back with more in a moment. Mike Miller, final half hour. Tomorrow, Tim Kirchen. And in the after show, the suit will explain what Jerome Bettis needs to do Sunday after this. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Mike Miller, Herald Times of Bloomington in the final half hour to talk about tonight's Penn State-Indiana basketball game. Tim Kirchen coming up tomorrow. Dottie Pepper tomorrow. Eli Gold, the voice of Alabama, coming up on Friday. Friday's show will be from West Lafayette. You're saying, well, that's a change. Yes, it is, based on recent emails. I got the email. We're leaving at 1 o'clock on Friday? We are? I thought we were leaving at 7. Well, we moved it up. What? I said, so we're practicing out there, right? No. I ended it at that point. I thought, okay, it's fine. I'm kind of a simple guy. Hey, look, let's just leave at 6, get there around 6:30, 7 o'clock, you know, get a great meal, go through some tape, go to, you know, set a curfew, get up the next morning at 7:30, eat at 8, little walkthrough, boom, go to the game at 11, kick their butt, come back. Am I simplifying it too much?
No.
Not me.
Your name and complex have never been in the sentence in the same sentence. No.
I used to drive the suit nuts. I'm like, it's all right. Don't worry about it. We'll get it. All right. The number of times I told him, don't worry about it. If I had a dollar for every time I said that, I would be retired from this show.
Your greens fees at the Blue Course would be paid for how many years?
Oh, probably a decade. Don't worry about it. It's all good. Don't worry about it. It's okay. What about... We got these numbers. It's okay.
I have close to 1 year under my belt with you on this show. I mean, you've told that to me a couple of times. Not a lot. Here and there. But I'm just trying to go with that... I'm trying to go with that attitude to not worry about it.
Yeah, but you're... You know, you're kind of low maintenance.
Tell my wife that, will you?
That's your job.
Okay.
Okay. Excuse me. I'm not getting in the middle of that
one. Yeah, but there's some days I need all the help I can get.
That's fine. You know, I'll text you.
Okay.
Makes you feel better.
Okay.
Let's see here. Penn State, Indiana tonight. Hall of Fame vote announced at 6 tonight. Now, the votes have been in since the 31st. So the votes have been in. Since New Year's Eve. But they're just going to announce it tonight. You need 75% to get in. And we'll find out. The June football signing period has been rejected by the NCAA. They've been talking about an early signing period. The possibility of a December signing period, though, is very much in play. This year the signing date is February 1st. That's the first Wednesday in February. It turns out it's the first this time around. The council modified a proposal for flexibility in the recruiting calendar today at the annual convention in Nashville by removing the June signing period. The council acted on the recommendation of the NCAA's Football Oversight Committee. The proposed calendar, which still does include a December signing period, awaits a final vote in April. Any proposed changes to the signing date also need approval from the Collegiate Commissioners Association, which administers the National Letter of Intent. Approved changes to the recruiting calendar could take effect as early as later this year. So, the possibility of an early signing period for June off the table. Possibility for an early signing date in December still on the table. And they'll make the final decision in April. They're also going to take a long look at the American Football Coaches Association proposal that a 10th coach be added. I think that's going to happen. And just the pure numbers tell you it should happen. When you have a roster, I know you have 85 scholarship players, but when you add in walk-ons, your roster can be anywhere from 110 to 125 with walk-ons, usually right in that range. A 10th assistant coach is very important and needed, in my opinion. In college basketball, you have 3 assistant coaches for 12 players. So you have an assistant coach for every 4 players. Well, right now you've got 9 assistant coaches for a roster of, say, 110, and that's 1 coach for every 12, and if it's more than that, 13 or 14 players. Well, I think you need a 10th assistant coach. And it's a proposal. I think it will pass. I think this early signing date in December will pass. Now, the American Football Coaches Association also recommended no Friday night football. Once the television committee is done laughing about that, it won't pass. We don't think we should have any Friday night games. No. especially the Big Ten sitting there, like, we just put together a really nice Friday night package for our new contract. So that's not going to happen. But it sure seemed nice of them to, as coaches recommended, because look, the coaches don't want short weeks, and I don't blame them. And I am not big at all on, you know, now, I realize I'm a contradiction here, and I do understand that. I'm not big on Friday night football in college, but I watch it. Even if I go to a high school game, I'll go home and catch the Friday night game when I'm done. And some of those games are at 9 o'clock at night, usually like Utah playing somebody, or sometimes a Pac-12 game. The Big Ten's going to have, what, six of them coming up this year? So I don't like it, but again, I'm a contradiction because I do watch it.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I want arguments on that show. I didn't hear anything about an argument. I mean, did you hear him say anything about arguments?
I could have sworn they were going to have one or two. How can they go 90 minutes without one?
I have no idea. I mean, I'm locked in now for the arguments. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in there. Yeah, it's going to be a great show. Yeah, but where's the argument part? Let's you and I argue about something.
Sure.
Your wife's always right.
I thought we were going to argue about something. Come on.
Okay, that topic's out. Let's see.
She'd be like, save that portion of the show. Then when I text you, that'll be your new text alert.
Hey, don't forget, on the after show, the suit is going to run down every carry Jerome Bettis had. Should be great.
Man.
That's on the after show.
Yeah, but you got a game tonight.
That's why we call it the after show. It's only online. Nobody knows where it is. It's great. I mean, in fact, we did some streaming numbers the other day. There was one person on the after show. And it turned out, you know, because the suit hosts the after show, and it turned out it was Suit Light. All right, so he just wanted to make sure where Dad was. All right, so
I had a Facebook friend today ask me, who's the suit? So I had to break it to him. And he's been a longtime listener of the show.
Okay, it's okay. Now he gets it, right?
He gets it now.
Oh, he gets it now. Did you tell him who Suit Light was?
I did. No, oh, wait. No, I have to send. Okay, I'll send him another message. No.
You got to send him a text message. Tell him who Suit Light is.
I will. We'll do it right now.
All right, so.
Yeah. He thought the suit was upper management.
No, pretty
said,
much.
No.
Pretty much 180 of that.
That's why I really had to steer him clear.
Drew is sitting at home right now, and you know he's laughing. Before we get to Mike Miller, Herald Times of Bloomington about tonight's Penn State-Indiana basketball game, time now for the sports bozo of the day. Yesterday was Antonio Brown. Today, Julian Edelman. Welcome to the show. Former quarterback at Kent State, current wideout for the Patriots, who said, basically disparaged the ownership and the organization of the Pittsburgh Steelers. You do know that it's the Rooneys, right? The Rooneys are the principal owners of the Steelers. You do know that, Julian, right? It would be like the Steelers saying something about Robert Kraft. Robert Kraft has a sterling reputation. You do know what you said was about the Rooneys, correct? Like one of the reasons that you still have a league? Julian? Here's a hint for you. Just catch passes. All right. And leave the history lessons to those who know it. All right. Let's get to Mike Miller, Herald Times of Bloomington beat writer covers Indiana basketball. Penn State will take on Indiana tonight. Jordan Center at 7, airtime 6:30. Mike, in a lot of ways, has this been an odd basketball year for Indiana?
Oh, it's been extremely odd. It's been weird, downright weird. You know, you start in Honolulu, you knock off Kansas, you wait about a month, you come home, and you get North Carolina and knock them off too. And you had a couple losses in between. You had the loss at Fort Wayne. You had the strange loss to Nebraska to open Big Ten play. You even closed your non-conference season with losses against Butler and Louisville. And it's been a season so far of just wild swings from one end of the spectrum to the other. It's certainly a team that obviously has proven capable of beating some of the top teams in the nation. Obviously, coming into the year, I thought, and I think a lot of other people would agree, that Indiana would be one of the top teams in the nation. I think they got up as high as number 3 back in November. But since then, since about mid-late December, it's been a pretty sizable fall for Indiana. Defensive lapses have hurt them at key moments. They've lacked some real poise offensively. They don't really have a point guard right now, and I think that's really hurt them. You know, after 4 years of having Yogi Ferrell providing just steady presence at the point, they just don't have that. They don't have consistency. They don't have, really, frankly, the playmaking abilities at that position. Josh Newkirk has pretty much been the guy. He's a former Pitt point guard, played his first 2 years at Pitt, and transferred to IU last summer. And this is his first season suiting up for the Hoosiers, and right now it's frankly just been a struggle for him. He's just not creating the kind of offense they need. He's been turnover prone. He doesn't finish very well. And for me, a lot of people point to the defensive woes, and yeah, they've appeared at key moments for this team. But for me, I point to that point guard play. And IU under Tom Crean, since they've kind of gotten over the hump and gotten past the sanctions of the Kelvin Sampson era, they've really had that identity as a really dynamic offensive team. And when you just don't have that creator at that point guard position, it makes it really hard to do some of the things you do well.
Yet they're averaging about 85 points per game right now, Mike. How important has transition offense been for them?
It's been key, and especially, when you get some of those big defensive stops like we saw them doing, especially late last season during Big Ten play, that really keyed their offense. And when this team is playing well, it's when they're getting out in transition. They're moving quick. You'd be hard-pressed to find a lot of teams that play a lot faster than Indiana. So when they can get off the break, when they can get some stops and get some outlet passes and push it, they're a tough team to stop.
You can't lose to Rutgers, because I think that really hurts your season when you do. Yet, did it give them some semblance of confidence, or is it fool's gold? What was the Rutgers game?
That's a good question. I'm still not sure. I don't think we'll really know until we get through this game tonight and figure out exactly where that game put them. I think that, confidence is a big part of this right now for Indiana. It's a young team. Granted, it's a team that, it's been together. It was largely together last year, although, of course, you had some veterans who really kept the glue in place for that team that went to the Sweet 16 last year. But, I think this fall, during the middle of the season, from being number 3, I think, in November to where they are now, I do think that's hurt the confidence a little bit. And I think that they've kind of been forced to look at themselves in the mirror and say, all right, what happened here? Where have we gone wrong? Rutgers helped in the sense that, they got some stops. They came back from a pretty slow start. But then again, it's Rutgers. I mean, Rutgers doesn't do anything well except for offensive rebound. That's because they missed so many darn shots.
Yes.
And that's what we saw the other day. Really, for this Indiana team, and this is what I think a lot of Indiana fans, and frankly, I think what Tom Crean will be looking for tonight, is how do they start the game? Because it seems like in some of these losses they've had, and really some of the games that they've just barely squeezed out, it all seems to begin with a really slow, absent, sleepy start. That's both offensively, defensively, what have you. Starting strong that's really been the tenor of some of these big wins Indiana's had, really, in the last month or so. So if they can get off to a good start tonight, I think that kind of sets the tone for them going forward in that game. And really for the season, I think that's a huge part of where they go from here, is being able to start strong and come out with some authority and some sense of purpose, really, especially on the offensive end.
You get to see OG Anunoby on a constant basis. How electrifying can he be?
Extremely. I mean, he's a guy who, if he has any sort of head of steam, he can jump over you, he can jump out of the gym, and he's going to very likely lay down a very violent dunk on top of you. One of the things for him is, obviously, last year it was he really started to break out around this time last year, about midway through January. He was playing in reserve role. He was playing maybe 10-15 minutes a night, but those 10-15 minutes were very, very productive. Now, obviously, he's coming off the bench still, especially recently, but, you know, he's playing 25 or so minutes a night. What they've been trying to do is get him to be a little bit more creative offensively. That includes, at times, handling the ball, at other times, shooting from the perimeter. That hasn't really been there. You know, really, OG's at his best when he's working the baseline, when he's around the rim, when he's just within a few feet of the rim. I mean, he's just not shooting very well from distance, but when he's around the rim, he's got a little bit of momentum, especially when he's finding some of the creases in a defense. We can work some angles, especially along that baseline, like I said. That's when he's at his best. And, you know, defensively, too, I forget how many steals off the top of my head. I think he had 6 or 7 steals the other day against Rutgers. He's just a freak athlete, very, very long, very, very athletic, and he's still kind of coming into his own. This is only his second season, but obviously I think he's probably has the best NBA upside of anybody on this Indiana roster. Really for him, the key has been consistency and finding his way in the offense, because again, I think sometimes he can kind of get lost on the outside, sometimes his shot. Right? I just don't think his shot is very consistent right now. I think that's kind of hurt him with some of the three-point shooting he's been trying to deliver this year. Granted, he's a kid who's out there 2-3 hours before the game. He's working on a shot. He's trying to get that down a little bit more consistently. But right now, it's just not there. But again, kind of going back to the beginning, if he has any sort of momentum, just any sort of if he's got a clear lane to the basket, he's going to take it. And he's probably going to get there.
Right. I mean, there's no question in my mind he has NBA athleticism. I don't really know if he has an NBA game yet. But he has NBA athleticism. Bryant certainly has an NBA kind of game, and I think Blackman has an NBA kind of shot. Would that be fair about both those guys?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, this has been a bit of a strange season for Thomas Bryant, you know, coming in with so many expectations. Granted, not his fault, he doesn't set the expectations, but they're there because what we saw at the end of last year, especially when you go back to that second-round game in Des Moines against Kentucky, I mean, he dominated Kentucky.
Yes,
he was extremely impressive against that Kentucky team. And coming into the year, you know, preseason All-America, you know, all Big Ten preseason, you know, what have you named, he's on that list. But he's, you know, he just hasn't been very assertive. I just don't see that he's not a true back-to-the-basket type guy. He's not a true rim protector. I think he's still trying to find himself. He's still a young kid for a sophomore. I think he's just turning 19 or so. Still a young kid trying to find himself, and I think that's been the big thing for him this season. You know, he goes out on the perimeter. He can knock down some threes. I'm sure you'll see him shooting a couple of those tonight, but you know, sometimes he gets lost. Sometimes he plays too high. You know, sometimes he's just not where he needs to be. And you know, defensively, he's still struggling. You know, defending ball screens, and so it's just a matter of putting those things together. And with James Blackman Jr., yeah, there's no question about it. That guy's one of the best pure shooters.
Yep.
I think you'll see both in the Big Ten, and I'll put him up there with anyone in college basketball. The kid can shoot. He's got really unlimited range, and that's really his thing. You know, as far as a more complete game, yeah, he's still working on that. You know, defensively, there's still some concerns about just awareness, just sticking with the play through the whole shot clock and not losing your man, because that happens so often to them. You know, at times Tom Crean's tried to get him to be a little bit more of a initiator on the offense, but you know, I'm not sure that's really his game too. So, you know, again, those are two guys that, you know, they have great, great upside, like you said, you know, professional, even NBA level upside. It's just a matter of still trying to find themselves. And I think that, you know, at large, too, is kind of a theme for this Indiana team right now in the middle of January.
Finally, how interested are you to see Penn State?
I'm very interested. I'm very interested because I know that, you know, Lamar Stevens and Tony Carr were very high up on Indiana's radar. I know Tom Crean really, really, really wanted Lamar Stevens. I mean, that was a guy that he had been recruiting for a long time and really had high hopes that he would end up in Bloomington. But, you know, just watching Penn State for, you know, the last few years, and, you know, they've always been punchy. They've always been, you know, a tough play under Pat Chambers. And right now, obviously, you're seeing some of the talent come together with Mike Watkins, and that's going to be interesting to me, is the rebounding battle, I think. The Rutgers game on Sunday, that was the first time all year Indiana had been out-rebounded.
Yeah, that's because Rutgers missed a lot of shots.
Exactly, that's exactly correct. That was the first time they'd been out-rebounded, but they'd also tied with North Carolina. I think both had 51 in that game. But, you know, going into this is a big thing. I mean, that's the focus. I mean, Penn State plays outstanding defense, and they rebound the ball very well. And those are two things that Indiana is going to absolutely have to do to avoid a repeat of the result they found in State College last year.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Appreciate the time very much. Look forward
Anytime.
To seeing you. Thanks,
yeah,
Mike.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Mike Miller, Herald Times from Bloomington, Indiana, beat writer who covers Indiana basketball tonight, 7 o'clock at the BJC. We'll come back and preview what the suit has on the after show in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Kia says, if you want a brand new 2016 Kia,
you can have them.
Sunbury Motors Kia will not stock any new 2016 Kias after January 2017. This means you'll win with the deepest discounts on 2016s ever. In 2016, a Forte 5 was $21,795.
Not in 2017.
Buy one now for only $16,993.
That's $4,802 off.
In 2016, an Optima LX was $23,405.
Not now.
Here in January, pay just $18,979.
That's a $4,426 savings.
A 2016 Rio 5 was $19,550 in 2016.
Not now.
Buy one for only $15,957. All new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. If you want a 2016 Kia, Sunbury Motors Kia says you can have them. Save thousands on your 2016 Kia from Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf
and at sunburymotors.com.
It's going to be a very interesting game tonight. Indiana offensively has absolute firepower. No getting around it. Bryant's had a good year inside. He's still an NBA player, but he's had a good year inside. Maybe not great, but good. Blackman is as fine a shooter as you're going to see. Newkirk's been okay. Morgan, really good athlete. Juwan Morgan. And Anunoby has that kind of NBA athleticism that he jumps through the gym. Yet something with them has been missing. Now, obviously, they beat Rutgers on Sunday, but, I mean, the game was at Assembly Hall. I mean, they lost that game. Staff should be fired, especially the spot they were in. You know, like Rutgers is better than they were. I mean, but still, it's they just don't shoot the ball very well. Penn State has been really playing well, and the reason they've been playing well is it's started on the defensive end. Patrick Chambers put a lot into the offense to start the season. As the season has gone along, he is really locked in on defense and rebounding. It is no coincidence, I feel, that in a team that's won three of its last four games, that right now they are number one in Big Ten play in field goal percentage defense, under 40%, and number two in rebound margin, second only to Purdue in conference games. As you just heard Mike mention, for the first time this season, Indiana was out-rebounded. But again, Rutgers misses so many shots, they get a lot of offensive rebounds. It's not a, that's a statement of fact that is not a knock. All right, just if you're wondering why. Penn State, in fact, got within one of Rutgers. The Rutgers out-rebounded Penn State 42-41 when they played. So they hit the glass. Indiana is not a great defensive team. Tom Crean did bring out what he calls the turnover tape, and he doesn't like to bring that out unless it gets to a certain point. Well, he brought out the turnover tape, and he showed the turnover tape to his team before the Rutgers game. In other words, takeaways they get that lead to easy transition baskets. So he's trying to show them graphically how playing some defense can lead to offense. Because his team is so offensively minded that defense bores them. Well, he was trying to tell them by showing him that tape earlier before the Rutgers game that defense leads to offense. And they turned in a really good defensive performance against Rutgers. And they were good enough offensively, obviously, in that game. They're almost always good enough offensively. They average 85 points a game. Now, when Penn State beat them last year, they came into that game averaging 85 points a game. Penn State won the game 68-63. Now, is it going to take that kind of performance tonight? It might. They can't let Indiana get 85, I can tell you that. Cannot let Indiana get 85. Just can't do it. Now, Indiana gets 85. I might as well just sit here and do the show until 10 o'clock tonight because Indiana gets 85. Penn State's not winning. But Penn State's played well. Now, what would really help Penn State is if Shep Garner gets going offensively. He's the sixth leading scorer for Penn State in conference play. Now, if you were to told me at any point from the middle of November to New Year's Eve that that Shep Garner would be the sixth leading scorer in Big Ten play for Penn State, I would have told you Penn State might have a chance to be 0-5.
I tell you who's a firm believer of the team is Dan Dockich, ESPN. He also has a radio talk show out in Indianapolis. Well, Coach Chambers was on with Dan yesterday, and he made it a point to bring that up to Dan. And it's like it's a head scratcher. You would think you just hear that stat, you'd look at the wins and losses, you'd think, oh, geez, they'd have to have a losing record.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think they would be 0-5. If you had thought that going in. What's happened is Josh Reeves has become that stat sheet stuffer that has been great. Watkins has really been good, obviously. Stevens, Carr, you know, Tony's had some ups and downs, but, you know, but he's been, for the most part, really good. Stevens has been really good. Peyton Banks has come off the bench, and he's been good. Julia Moore's done his thing. Terrence Samuel understands his role now. Garner's the one where you're looking at saying, and if Garner can somehow get himself where in conference play he's averaging 11 or 12 points a game, that actually would be huge for Penn State. I'm not saying that Garner needs to average 15 to 20 points a game. If he averages 11 or 12 points a game the rest of the way, I think that's a huge swing factor for Penn State. Now, I know teams have been working hard to take him out. You know, in talking with Doug Collins, I mean, that's one of the things he mentioned that Chris Collins wanted to do. Make sure Garner didn't beat him. And you can see defensively they tilted the defense toward him. Other teams have done that as well, so that's been a factor. But at some point, they've got to loosen the reins on that. Because of Penn State's other threats, that's where Shep Garner needs to take advantage of it. Tomorrow, Dottie Pepper talks some golf. Tim Kirkchen on the Hall of Fame. Your home for the NFL playoffs and Super Bowl 51. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.